The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And we say hello to you on a Friday. We've made it one of the most exciting afternoons of the year with all the college basketball going on. A prelude to March Madness. Well, I think you could say it has already begun based on what we went through here yesterday. Before we even get going, let's give you an update on what is going on right now and what has already gone on. Florida and Tennessee are locked into a matchup, and it's starting to look a little like the other day when they met in Knoxville. Tennessee with a 13-point lead. Both are safely in the NCAA tournament. This is really about seeding. Tennessee could move up a little bit. And the Gators right now are somewhat on that 8-9 line. So if you missed it earlier, Alabama just destroyed Mississippi State. At time, I think it was like 49-17 at half, leading Stuart Mandel to tweet, "You think Saban will pull Tua in the second half?" That might have been too soon, but that was this is the bracket right now. Alabama has moved on to the semis. They'll await the winner of Florida and Tennessee. And then tonight, Arkansas takes on Missouri. Hog fans excited about seeing their team for the first time this SEC tournament. And then Ole Miss, maybe needing a win to get into the tournament. With all the chaos and carnage around, Ole Miss has moved up on the bubble and right now could find itself in the tournament with a win over LSU. LSU simply playing for seeding. Meanwhile, we'll keep our eye on what else is going on around college basketball, and there is quite a bit. Kansas is done for the Big 12 championship, a team that has put on a bit of a run late in the year. Remember, they took that whacking at Knoxville a couple of months ago. They had a COVID positive test this morning, so they are done with the Big 12 championship. And unfortunately, we are seeing a lot of that. Remember, we saw Duke yesterday. Today, more bad news from Greensboro. Virginia, the top seed, is gone as well. And yeah, you hate to miss the conference tournament, but you do start to get very nervous right now about next week and hope that you can test your way back into the NCAA tournament. We'll keep you updated on all these stories throughout the day. Meanwhile, in football, the Oklahoma-Nebraska game is supposed to be reconnected this year. There's some rumors out there that one of the two is trying to back out. That one of the two would be Nebraska. This is supposed to be the 50th anniversary of the game of the century. That was back in November, on Thanksgiving Day, by the way, 1971, one of the biggest football games ever. Joe Castiglione talking about how excited they were to play the game. Right now, that game could be in trouble. Another big rivalry game this weekend. Jerry Rice knows what it'll take to beat Deion Sanders in Jackson State. Deion's team takes on Jerry's old team as the spring season continues. And we're off and running here on a busy Friday afternoon. And Kyle Tucker from The Athletic, he'll give us the day after in the Commonwealth. Matt Baker on the Gators, both football and basketball. Jean-Jacques Taylor from the Undefeated on the game this weekend. And Nolan Richardson won a national championship in 93 or 94, I'll double check. That was 94, and he will be with us as a prelude to tonight's Arkansas game. So the great Hall of Fame coach, looking forward to visiting with him. And we will take your phone calls as well at 855-242-7285, and let's get right to it. And Terry starts us off from Baton Rouge. Good afternoon, Terry. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How you doing, Paul?
Terry, we're doing great. Thank you for the call.
Calling from Cartersville, Georgia, the home of Trevor Lawrence. Paul, what I'm calling you about, I talked to you about the Rebels yesterday. They looked pretty good last night, didn't they?
They did. Yeah, they sure did. They need a win tonight, though. There's no getting around it.
Well, here's my question. They've got to play well, but why is Will Wade still coaching with all the controversy around him? And I heard on your show a couple of years ago him, you know, offering money to someone, and he was bragging about it. I think with LSU's toxic athletic environment they're under right now, wouldn't it be good for them just to cut things loose with him right now? Because they need some positive news down there, don't you think?
Well, let's forget the controversy for a second. Will Wade has gotten his team to the tournament and continues to. So from a recruiting standpoint and from a quality standpoint, he's done pretty well. Now, the allegations you're talking about have yet to be proven, and he has denied them.
Right.
The tape that purportedly was on an FBI wiretap was never introduced in the trial in New York. So ultimately, Will Wade will live or die depending on the NCAA investigation, which is not finished yet.
Okay. Well, thanks for the update, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for the call. And let's continue with more phone calls. And Pat is up next in Georgia. Hey, Pat, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Thank you. 3 years ago, Georgia hired Tom Crean. 2 years ago, Alabama hired a new head basketball coach. And Alabama's cupboard was not bare, but he's done a wonderful job in 2 years to make Alabama relevant again. I'm beginning to think maybe Georgia should have hired him instead of Tom Crean. But Tom's not exactly chopped liver either. He's got a really, really good pedigree. So it must come down to recruiting. And I don't think Georgia's been able to recruit for 20, 25, 30 years.
Pat, hold on 1 second, okay? I mean, they had the number one player in the NBA draft this past season, so I wouldn't yeah. exactly say they haven't been able to recruit.
Well, the other four players that were on the court with him were best supporting actors, and they let him do the job, okay?
Crean is known as a recruiter. And, you know, it's one thing to be able to recruit. It's another thing to be able to put the right pieces together. And he has not done that yet.
Well, I don't know the answer to this question. I'm asking you. Why, and you think Georgia can recruit, and by definition, they got one player last year. Why can't Georgia recruit like Alabama and like other teams in North Carolina and Virginia and Tennessee, Alabama, Louisiana? Are we too close to the ACC?
No,
it's
ridiculous. Georgia is, when it comes to college basketball, Georgia isn't any different than Alabama. You either want to go to a school or you don't, and so far, he has just not been able to put the right pieces together. I think it's as simple as that. And, yeah, I would say it's been disappointing. I mean, I'm not defending him. I'm just simply, I mean, when you have the top player in the country last year or the number one player that goes, I mean, that you just have to put pieces around him. And Crean has not been able to do that yet.
Well, I hope that's the case. I just don't think Georgia can recruit. Now, Coach Cal at Kentucky, he's had one bad year, and 2013 might have been questionable. I couldn't believe he'd been there 12 years. Kentucky should not even think about doing anything with him, at least until the end of the
year. Well, they're not going to.
Maybe never.
You know, what we had, Pat, thanks for the call. I mean, what we had yesterday was a classic meltdown on this program. It was, I don't think we've ever had anything quite like it with Kentucky fans, but they were angry. They've lost 16 games. They lose in the first round to an average team. I mean, I think we saw today that Mississippi State, I mean, they lost by nearly 40 points. So they didn't exactly lose to an Elite Eight team. But anyway, that's where we are. We have plenty of time for you to jump in here at 855-242-7285. We look forward to talking to you, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Kentucky gone yesterday, Mississippi State gone today, and we will see Alabama meet the winner of the Florida-Tennessee game, which is a 9-point deficit at halftime. Tonight, the games are Arkansas, Missouri, Ole Miss, LSU, and, of course, the semifinals.
I thought we were going to make a run, and the way we started the game was so disappointing. And basically, we got punked. We got, you know, I mean, they're plus 15 rebounds. Are you kidding me? I've never seen that. Division one against division three, maybe, but I've never seen 15. What are you going to be down 30 rebounds? They're going to out rebound you 50 to 20. I mean, I never heard of such a thing. In the second half, I told him at halftime, I said, this will be a great story, this comeback, if that's what you want, but I can't play anybody that's not going to rough it up. If you don't want body contact, you can't be in this game. But, you know, it's just disappointing, and it's, let me just say, kind of like the year went. You know, a couple baskets here, a block here. They make a free throw. We miss a free throw.
We welcome you back. Listening to John Calipari, it doesn't sound any better today than it did yesterday. Kyle Tucker joining us right now. Many times over the years, he has been here talking about big Kentucky wins. And shots at the Final Four, but not this time around. Kyle, thank you for the time. And what is left to say about this disaster, better known as the 2021 Kentucky basketball season?
Well, there's a lot to say at some point. You know, and Calipari didn't want to talk about it yesterday. I asked him after the game sort of what he has learned through the course of this, what has been the worst season from a record standpoint in 94 years at Kentucky, and he wasn't ready to go there. He wanted to take some time, and I do understand that. I think he's got to assess his entire program from top to bottom. I don't think he can just dismiss it as COVID. I think that was a huge contributing factor. This was the worst possible year to have his most in a guy who's used to flipping rosters in a pretty major way. This was the most turnover ever, even for him. 10 new guys. This year, this was the worst case to do that in a pandemic year where your off season is shortened, where you lose all your gimme games at the front end of the schedule and your exhibition games, and just the nature of, you know, the old team. It's good to be old this year. It's good to have played together this year. Those teams are surviving a little better. That is a factor, but I don't think he can afford to dismiss this season as just that. There are other things in the program he's going to have to look at. And figure out how to never let this happen again. Because guys won a national title and been to four Final Fours here is not on the hot seat. But do this again next year, and then it might be a different conversation.
Yeah, Kyle, I realize you were at the game yesterday, but and rarely do we come on after a Kentucky loss, even a couple hours removed. But there were some moments here that were about as vicious as I've ever heard for a Kentucky coach, not named Billy Gillespie, and I really wasn't sure what to make out of it. And these weren't just irrational people calling from the end of the sports bar. These were longtime Kentucky fans, as you know. You talk to these people all the time. How would you describe the mood of at least the fans in the Commonwealth?
Well, I think there's a segment that I think does want to just mostly give him a pass because of what he's done and because of the COVID year. There's some people like that, probably a good number of people like that. Wait and see if it's different next year. But there's a growing number of people that have, you know, one and done fatigue. They're tired of flipping the roster year after year after year. You know, it is okay if you're going to the Final Four or right on the cusp of it every year, and they pretty much have been. I would point out that the last time there was an NCAA tournament, they were one shot away from the Final Four. Last season, they won the league by three games and had a chance to make a run. It's not like this is, this is an annual scourge for Kentucky. They've remained in the mix pretty much throughout his tenure. But even when they were winning, I think there were some people that it began to wear on them after a dozen years of a whole new team every year. They like to love on their team here. They like to get to know these guys and sort of celebrate them and understand their stories and who they are watch them sort of grow through the years. That's been a consistent thing at Kentucky before John Calipari. And so there are people, I think, that want to see that. And then when you have a season like this, it just sort of pours gasoline on that fatigue. It's I think, a strong case for people that want the way he's building rosters to change, to say, look, see, this is what happens when you do that. So I think people are frustrated with that. They'd like to see more retention. I think as much as anything, people are frustrated not by the guys who go pro, who are the lottery pick locks, but the guys who go pro and to get picked in the second round or go undrafted. And the guys who play 1 year a little bit here and then transfer and play well somewhere else in a Power 5 program. So I think there's a whole lot of that going on right now that's really come to a head because this season went so poorly.
Kyle, from a recruiting standpoint and from a roster management standpoint, what does it look like next year?
Well, it's that, to me, that's another sort of – that's kind of the fulcrum on which this whole thing rests. You know, which way is it going to go next season? Is it going to be any better next season or much better next season? Really is going to be decided by how many guys he can get to come back. I've been saying for several weeks now that John Calipari, once it was clear this was pretty much a lost season, that John Calipari's entire focus should have been already and should be going forward in the next couple of weeks, retention. Like, you've got to have a big bunch of these guys come back, and you know, it's simple to say they were terrible. Why would you want any of them back? Well, that's insane. You do want them back. The reason it was so bad is because you completely rebooted your roster. You don't want to do that again. They need guys like Keon Brooks to you know, not say, I'm going to go take a G League contract or transfer. And his dad told me last night that rumors of that were not true, that he was looking at a transfer. That would be huge for him to come back. If you could get a guy like Davion Mintz to take advantage of the free year and come back as a sixth-year senior, a guy who finished the year shooting red hot, that's huge. You know, you've got to have three or four quality players who played major minutes this year come back. And we just don't know yet. I mean, you would think that nobody on this team, other than maybe Isaiah Jackson, feels like they should go anywhere. In a normal program, they'd all be back. But at Kentucky, we know we've come to expect that a bunch of them are going to leave anyway.
Kyle, you've covered this beat a long time. I mean, almost maybe more than 10 years. As you've watched John Calipari, is he the same coach that he was when it all began, right before he won the national championship in New Orleans?
I think some people would say that's the problem, right? You know, stubbornness, because the game changes and evolves. And one thing we haven't talked about is sort of style of play. You know, he adopted the dribble drive 3 or 4 years into his career at Memphis when he couldn't get things going offensively. He borrowed it from Vance Wahlberg, a junior college coach at the time, and that ignited Memphis. He innovated there, and he used that all the way through his time at Kentucky to great success. But, you know, has that run its course? Has the game evolved in a way that he sort of stubbornly resisted? I mean, the three-point revolution, Calipari goes out of his way to talk about how much he doesn't care about three-pointers and doesn't want to rely on three-pointers. And then he runs into this season where they struggle and where they get run out of the building in their first meeting with Alabama, in a stark contrast of styles, where it's all layups and three-pointers and no mid-range. And Kentucky fans are watching their team take and miss long twos. So that's, you know, that's the question. In that way, he is the same coach as the guy who arrived here 12 years ago and maybe needs to change. That's another part of what he's going to have to look at when he sort of self-evaluates. He said yesterday he hopes a bunch of the players self-evaluate and are realistic about who they are and where they are. I think that's got to be true of the head coach as well. He's a Hall of Fame coach. He can coach X's and O's. That's a silly argument that he can't, that he can only recruit. He was outsmarting people when he was scratching his way up from the bottom at UMass. He can do that, and he can innovate. He has several times, but this is a crossroads for him. He's going to have to reinvent himself again.
Kyle, you've been around him enough to at least read his temperament. You know, from a distance, it seemed like he handled the season okay, but you know, at what point, if it doesn't turn around, do you think he'll say, you know what, I could still go somewhere else?
I mean, if it wasn't for his contract, it wouldn't surprise me if he did want to go somewhere else. I mean, he's kind of been in a battle this season with fans. I mean, first there was the kneeling at the national anthem and the Black Lives Matter protest that they participated in that I think for a certain segment of the fan base that offended them, you know, and they didn't like it. And that got them on a bad foot in the first place. And then there's the flip side of it where he kind of, I think, bungled the response where he didn't full-throatedly back the players when that criticism came, and he had to sort of circle back. The one thing I would say that I noticed about Cal that was a little different this year is he seemed flustered more than I've ever seen him. He misspoke so many times when he's always the king of the press conference. He kind of bungled the way he talked about Terrence Clark, the five-star freshman who had an injury, about kind of questioning whether it was real and then finding out upon further testing that it was real, and that kind of makes you look bad. There were so many instances like that, the handling of Dante Allen, the homegrown kid everybody wanted to see play, and the way he talked about him, the way he managed that kid's minutes. It was a source of frustration and really, I think, animosity between him and the fans. And so I think if the contract, if he didn't have what amounted to a lifetime contract, owed insane amounts of money in a buyout, you know, I don't know that he would not entertain saying, I just throw his hands up and say, give me a fresh start. But because of that contract, at least on his end, it's hard for me to see him ever walking away from that money.
Kyle, you mentioned the protest, and obviously, you know, we hear about it in bits and pieces, but there, even yesterday, there seemed to be some real anger coming from particularly older fans in various parts of the state. You understand that better than most. Is that something he gets past if he turns the program around, or is that going to linger?
Oh, I mean, look, if Kentucky was undefeated right now, the people who are furious about the kneeling and anything else related to it, they'd probably still be grumbling about it under their breath, but they'd have their hat, their shirt, their pants, their socks, their underwear, and their RV painted blue headed to Indianapolis. So, winning cures everything. Losing, I think, exacerbates all the little underlying things. I mean, there's a million things about Calipari that I think some folks in Kentucky wouldn't have tolerated at all from the beginning if they weren't really good from the beginning. But when your program is a point of pride, of state pride, year in and year out, and you can boast having the best players and NBA stars and draft picks, which fans get angry about now because they want to prioritize winning. But when you have both, everybody's happy. Losing is what really fractures a fan base and its coach.
Kyle Tucker from The Athletic covers the Kentucky Wildcats. Kyle, thanks. We will talk again.
Thank
you.
You
bet. Great to have you on. And that's the Kentucky report for today. We had quite a bit of conversation about it yesterday, probably some more today as well. We will get to your calls in a moment at 855-242-7285. We'll update you when the second half begins in Nashville, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Great to have you here on a Friday afternoon, and we have a long way to go before we work our way through the end of the day. We'll keep an eye on Nashville as well. We're Tennessee and Florida with a 9-point lead have just begun the second half. Alabama wiped out Mississippi State by nearly 40 points in the early game. Let's hit the calls. And Dave in Kentucky is up next. Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Paul. I've got a question. I'm 71 years old. I've been a UK fan since before there was any TV on the radio. And I'm tired of listening to people. I'm tired of, like this year, Calipari drove me crazy, some of the calls he made. But now we got to ask you, goes out there and he dribbles around in circles like he's got a 20-point lead or is down 10 points, which he did quite a few times this year. Who are you going to get at Kentucky that can do a better job than what Calipari has done there in the 10, 11 years he's been there?
Well, I wonder, Dave, if you're looking at that the wrong way. The answer is nobody, because his resume speaks for itself. But you can't. I don't think if you're being objective about where this program is today, you can go all the way back. You have to put a line of demarcation down, and I think Kyle Tucker did that. The program has been very good, but what do Kentucky fans want? What is the treetop for them? And you know, is it a national championship? Is it winning on draft night? What is it?
To me, a basketball program is for championships. That's the way I look at it. But what I'm getting at is like the days of you winning a championship, like programs used to, even like Duke, like us, like North Carolina. Them days are over.
You think so? Villanova's won two in the last 5-6 years.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I think that Calipari needs to make some changes in the way he does things. Don't get me wrong. Well, what I'm saying, you know, don't cut your nose off despite your face.
Yeah, but Dave, I am in total agreement with you on that. But I think you can get hung up though. And miss the train, and I'm not suggesting it's over for John Calipari, but there are two coaches in the SEC right now who have done a phenomenal job, and they've only been there a couple of years. There are other really good coaches. This is a different league than it was when Calipari arrived, and I'm not sure that's part of the reason. I don't know. He rolls the dice a lot. With his approach to recruiting, and sometimes it is going to blow up. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Jason, who is up next. Hey, Jason, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Love your show.
Thank you.
Do you have any information about this Russ Probe thing, the accusation he has about Alabama and Georgia's recruit?
Yes, I do. In fact, Mark Schlabaugh from ESPN did a story on that yesterday or today, and he said that Rush Probst has been put on administrative leave, which is a formality. I don't think he's getting his job back. Secondly, that Probst has given both Alabama and Georgia an affidavit saying that he has not made nor does he have in his possession any specific NCAA violations. Does that really mean anything? No, it doesn't. But I think this story from an Alabama-Georgia standpoint is probably going to be over. It's a long way from being over from Rush Probst's standpoint. But anyway, appreciate the call. He will definitely not be around there long. JD is up next. Hey, JD, go right ahead.
Mr. Paul, how you doing today?
JD, we're doing really, really well. Thank you.
Listen, let me ask you a few questions. I'll get out and out of the way. That would have been my basketball. Is it where they put more emphasis in it this year, where they've had more success than what they have in the past? Or what is your kind of see the recipe of how they turn things around the basketball program?
Well, they went out and hired a coach who really has developed some of the players that were already there. He just has done a better job with them than the, I mean, Alabama's, they're paying more than they've ever paid. But everyone's doing that. I just think they got the right guy. I think it's as simple as that.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm real proud of how they're doing this year. And all the SEC teams, really, besides Kentucky. But anyhow, let me ask you one quick question, and I'll let you go. On this bench with LSU, how far do you think is – I like old Coach O, and no involvement from him at all on any of this, is it?
It doesn't appear to have affected Coach O at all. He was there when the Darius Geis allegation came up, but I don't think he is in any danger at all.
Well, I hope not. He seems to be a good, honorable man. Right now, I mean, he's on the enemy side, being an Alabama man, but he does. I really like him. He seems like he's brought some more class to the program,
Well, he's brought a lot to the program, including a national championship. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Ryan is up next. Hey, Ryan, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We are doing well.
This is first time caller, long time listener. Thank you and your crew do an excellent job.
Thank you.
I had two quick questions for you. The first one is, obviously the talent wasn't completely bare when Coach Oates got there, but after this job, I think, you know, I believe I speak for everyone, I think he's done a very exceptional job. You think a major basketball programs will be throwing huge offers his way? And I got one more question.
Yeah, well it really doesn't matter whether they do or not, because he just agreed to a long-term extension.
Okay. The second one is, I like how the women's basketball adopted the four-quarter program. You think the men's basketball will do the same? I mean, I think it's more exciting.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you on that. I think that would be, I know they've talked about it. They do that for international play, but I'll have to talk to somebody in the rules, but there has been some consideration of that. I frankly think it's a pretty good idea. Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Let's see. I'm checking my time here. Whether we, sometimes you really don't know what you're doing, even though you're here. Let's check in with Robert in Arkansas. Hey, Robert, go right ahead.
Paul, I'm so excited to get to talk to you. I love to see your smiling face, man.
Thank you very much.
And it's my lucky day because I hit the number one time, and there they were. I cannot believe it. And also because you're talking to Coach Richardson. I'm excited about that. I was at the first game that he coached at old Barnhill Arena. Coach Broyles introduced him. I don't even remember the opponent. It was some preseason, you know, deal. And, you know, he struggled a few times for a couple seasons after that, you know, what he went through with his daughter and everything. But I just want to say, since he's coming on to visit with you today, he is really loved by this fan base. And, you know, there's some things that went water under the bridge. I just want to pass that along to him. He is really loved by the Razorback fan base.
Robert, does Coach still live in does he still live in the area? Do you know?
He lives not too far from me. As okay. a matter of fact, I was going to – and I never see him. But, yeah, he's here. You'll see him at before the COVID thing. You will see him at a lot of the games. He's still very supportive. And, you know, he's just a – he's one of the two best, in my opinion, Arkansas coaches in any sport. He and John McDonald, I think, are the two guys that really are the two legends, I think. And Coach Broyles and some others, obviously. But those are the two guys in a I would just want, if he's listening ahead of the interview, I just want to say that to him. And I think I speak to a lot of fans.
Robert, I'm glad to hear that, because I know there was some bad feelings at one point, and I'm talking 20 years ago. I'm not talking about yesterday. But I remember when Mike Anderson came back, that was a big deal to Nolan. He used to I used to see Nolan in Birmingham all the time when Anderson was coaching at UAB.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to pass it. I've been a fan going back to the Lanny Van Eemen era with Martin Terry. You remember those guys?
Oh, yeah.
And then through Coach Sutton, and then through – and then, you know, it was kind of lean after Coach Richardson left, but I think the program's in good hands. So I just wanted to say that. And also, can I pass along a name that I think would be a really good interview for you? I don't know if you've talked to him. Well, he's got a business just a few –
sure.
Like a mile down the street from me. That's Mike Conley Sr. You know Mike, I'm sure.
Yes.
I don't know if you've ever interviewed him.
I don't think I have.
He would be great. He's such a personal guy. I'll go by and wave at him, and he's just got such a great personality. And he's got that kid that's doing okay for himself right now.
yes, he does.
In the NBA. You know, you might have heard of him. So he would be a great interview. I know you talked to John Daly occasionally.
Yeah, in fact, I heard from John yesterday. We had Felipe on yesterday, and John sent me a text.
Was that right?
And I must tell you,
I was a senior.
When I hear from John Daly, I'm still in shock, and I've gotten to know him over the years, but I still can't believe that Because when I remember covering John at Augusta his first time there, and when he burst onto the scene, and people don't realize, there was nobody bigger in golf than John Daly.
Well, can I just briefly tell you about John? When I was a senior in high school, John was in the fourth grade. We grew up in the same town. I was, and we were both sand lizards. And, you know, John was this little white-haired kid running around playing all the sports. He was just, you know, overflowing with enthusiasm for baseball, football, everything. And after I graduated and left, I never knew what happened to him. And then before you knew it, about, 84 or so, I hear from a friend, hey, have you seen this guy playing golf up at the U of A? Yeah, man, he can crush it, 300 yards. And that was back when nobody was hitting it that far. And
hey, Robert, I apologize to break in here, but I was looking around and I could not remember whether we had taken a break or not, and my gut instincts were correct. We have to go to a break here, otherwise they're just going to eject us out of our chair. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.